wonderful, majestic world around us, it's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That it is, and we're joined today by our expert, Kushla McGovern. Dr. Kushla McGovern, how are you doing today?
I'm good, how are you?
Good. I always feel like, well, I've been with you for the past few Dear Sciences, haven't I?
You have.
And I always feel like you get me in a very bad spot where I'm always like, I'm good, how are you? But anyway.
It's all good.
Start of uni back up?
Yeah.
Busy once again?
Yeah, it's great to see the students back.
It is really cool. Yeah. It is very, very cool. Now, we have some very interesting topics that I very briefly glanced over just before because having to cover for Castor today, he went home sick. But the first one's really interesting to me. The International Space Station is too clean?
Yeah, now this is really cool because, International Space Station, as you can imagine, it's got air filters. Each week they wipe it all down, they vacuum it, and it's to keep it clean. You know, because we like to have clean areas to keep healthy, right?
Yeah.
But what they find is actually astronauts often experience like skin rashes, they might have an immune dysfunction, they have other inflammatory conditions. And it's a case of maybe the International Space Station is too clean.
Right. I mean, I guess that's a good sign in a way, like they're doing, like, you know, they're keeping it clean. But in the same way, like, why is it too clean?
Why is it too clean? Okay, so it's this whole thing of microbes, they compete for resources in space, right?
Yeah.
And so what you want is you want lots of different microbes because then they're all going to compete and no one rules, right? And so that's often when we get sick, it's because there's an imbalance. And, you know, so you think about last year we actually talked about Clostridioides difficile, where it's this bacteria that you get in your gut that often once you've taken antibiotics for something else and it's killed all the bacteria in that, but this kind of survives a little bit and it kind of takes over and makes you sick. So this is where this thing of the International Space Station is maybe too clean and need to kind of look at what's going on, is that there are microbes there. There's just not a lot of different kinds.
Right.
So the microbial diversity is low.
Right.
So basically it was 803 samples were taken across different areas of the International Space Station, and then they've looked to see what types of microbes are there, and basically most of them are from the humans and the building material. So most are actually from human skin, which you can imagine, from the people living there, and less than 0.3% from natural environment like soil and water. Again, kind of makes sense when we think about the environment, right?
Yeah.
But this is what this is kind of the problem, is that it means then that you're not getting this competition between different species, and so this could lead to problems. And so where this is kind of also very interesting is that if you're going to have space missions that last for years, maybe going to need to think about this and kind of seed the environment with some microbial diversity.
Yeah, which is like something I guess as like a general person you wouldn't ever really think about the need for.
Yeah.
But when you say it like that, like you know, you need a variety of microbes in the International Space Station.
Right, like once you start thinking about it, it doesn't necessarily seem like a big thought, like it's you kind of go okay, maybe of course, but until you start doing the analysis and start thinking long term. And then I did a quick search after this, and you know, there's obviously with microbes and stuff and long-term space missions now, they're starting to think of different ways you can use them as well, like can you use them obviously for air purification, food, making things like the harder materials and stuff. So I do think microbiology in space is going to be a big area in the future.
Yeah. Do you think it's going to, our research into this area is going to expand as we head forward?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, very interesting topic. Now, what's next? We have here birds of paradise, way more colors is the notes we have down here.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
So I kind of think of this as fancy feathers, footwork, and fluorescence. So, I love a good natural fluorescent story, and that's all about when you have one color of light hits something and it glows another color. And so when I saw this story about birds of paradise, I had to read more.
Yeah.
So just to recap, birds of paradise, there are 45 species and they've found fluorescence in 37 of these. So this is, you know, when they're under a certain type of light, they'll glow a different color. These birds of paradise, you've probably, if you don't know them off the top of your head, you will have seen pictures of them because they're the real fancy birds, right?
Yeah.
They've got like these amazing colors, like they're bright blue or ultra black, or they're pink. You know, they've got these freaky feathers where you might have two really long ones coming out of the tail that are curl, or, you know, out of the head, they've got long ones that kind of got bulbs on the ends, or they're also really known for their courtship. right? Mm, so they're, yep. they're really bright and colourful because that's the male birds and...
Yeah, cute. Yeah, trying to appease to the... Yeah,
yep, yep. appeal to the females,
yep,
right?
Yep.
But they also do, with courtship, they have like these really strange behaviours where they'll clean their area and that, and then they'll do this little dance and stuff. So if you've got 5 minutes, check out David Attenborough's Planet Earth, and there's a bit of a clip of one of these birds doing its courtship dance.
Mm.
So they're kind of, they're pretty... amazing birds anyway, and yep. it turned out they're a bit fancier than we thought as well.
As they should be. I mean, if they're doing all this behaviour to get a mate and having these beautiful, luscious-looking colours on them,
yep.
what more else would you want? Like, good.
Exactly, right? What's also really interesting about this is it was fish researchers that discovered this.
I did see that, yeah.
So they're called ichthyologists, and basically what they'd done, they worked at the American Natural History Museum, or they work at the American Natural History Museum, and they had gone through all these fish samples, seeing if there was fluorescence. And then they claim it was, you know, they decided they wanted to look at another animal to strengthen their theory, whereas really I think they just had a blue light and they wanted to go through all the cabinets.
Yeah.
And that's literally what they did. They just went, the American Natural History Museum has one of the largest bird collections of in the world.
Yeah.
And so they just pulled open the cabinets and they just had their blue light and they were like seeing what glows and noticed that the birds are polarized, tended to glow a bit more, or there was quite a few. So then they actually set up a proper photo booth, and so you can see these amazing pictures, which the pictures are essentially black because it's just under this blue light, and then you filtering to just see the fluorescence, which is tends to be in the green or the greenish yellow.
Interesting. Yeah. It's a very random discovery.
It is rather, right? Yeah, like yeah. it's, and it's one of these things where we know like invertebrates have a lot of fluorescence.
Mm.
And now with vertebrates, like they're starting to look more and more at this. And it's, yeah, it's really interesting.
That is very, very interesting. Wow. Oh, to be a beautiful tropical bird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Birds of paradise, sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness gracious. Now, for our final topic, what do we have here?
So, again, this is displays, but in a very different sense.
Yes.
If you think about display technology, like in my lifetime, I'm old but not ancient, it's come a long way, right? We've gone from these big boxes with cathode ray tubes, and now we've got, you know, really thin screens and stuff. The next generation that aiming for are stretchy and bendy,
right?
And so one of the problems that we have with existing materials is that they give us disordered screens and they're a bit of a poor fit. So if you think of like a sheet of something stretchy, just think of a balloon, right?
Yep.
You've cut it into a rectangle. If you pull it left and right apart, in the center it will shrink, right?
Yeah.
That's not going to be great for a display. That's
yeah.
going to cause distortion.
Yeah.
And this phenomenon is referred, the measuring of this is called Poisson's ratio. And so what these Korean researchers have managed to do is they've actually made a stretchable substrate from basically nanostructured aligned what are called block copolymers. And so they've basically been able to make this material that if you stretch it in one way, it doesn't shrink in the perpendicular direction. So
yep.
you don't get all that vertical shrinkage.
Mm.
So what they've used is polystyrene, something that we're all kind of familiar with.
Yeah.
But they've mixed it with another polymer called polyisobutylene. And they've managed to arrange the polymer chains basically in one direction.
Mm.
And so when they pull their material, it only has this Poisson ratio of 0.07, whereas in most elastomers, stretchy material we have now, is like 0.4 or 0.5. So
okay.
they've really done this. Like
yep.
it's really cool. But what's also really awesome is that it's still transparent. So this
True.
Has been another problem. To make something stretchy that doesn't, you know, it stretches in one direction but it doesn't deform in
yeah,
the other.
Yeah, yeah.
And remain transparent.
Yes, yes.
And basically the way they managed to do this is a certain type of rolling. So
right,
they managed
right.
to get these things all aligned evenly across the sheet.
Yeah.
And so then they could maintain this alignment, maintain it being stretchy. And so I was like reading this paper or looking at this paper going, yeah, but how much did they really stretch it kind of
yeah,
thing?
Yeah, yeah.
And they actually claim that they can stretch it by more than 50% in one direction.
Yeah.
And it's actually got very little shrinkage in the other direction. So this
right.
is, you know, kind of viable for use. Kind
yeah,
of
yeah.
So they did go the next step and they printed a picture on it and they put some LEDs on it and made it so that you could see a display, stretched it. And what you found was that the pixels stayed in the arrangement that they should. You didn't get this unbroken, distorted image. You didn't get wrinkles in that. And so this is a really promising for the next generation of displays.
Yeah.
You know, like when we want to use them in like wearable devices, even in solar cells and that, you
yeah.
can start using these materials.
Yeah, very cool finding. Yeah.
yeah.
Awesome. I think that's all we have for you today. But thank you very much, Kushla McGovern, for Dr. Krishla McGovern for joining us on the show today. Thank you, MoTat, and thank you, Science.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MoTat, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.